You're listening to Radio Free California, the voice of freedom, heard far and wide into the dark crevices of darkness, shedding light to the embattled and embittered hearts and minds wherever they may be. Up next, Frank Boomer reports. Thank you for joining us at Frank Boomer Still at Large, a show about people, places, and love. If you enjoy it, tell a friend. Radio Free California. The communist infiltration of America was prophesized. Another remarkable forecast taking on new relevance in our day, as Hitler's forces rampaged across Europe during World War II, the world's greatest capitalist nation, America, entered into a strange alliance with Britain, the greatest colonial power, and the Soviet Union, the greatest communist state. When this happened, a peculiar phenomenon occurred across America. A popular wave of emotional fervor for the Soviet Union surged. Many influential men, magazines, and newspapers began fawning over Joseph Stalin. Franklin Roosevelt went so far as to release Communist Party USA leader Earl Browder from prison as a means to promote national unity between American communists and the general public. This was Roosevelt. Now, during this time of trial and confusion, however, the strong voice of Herbert W. Armstrong warned the nation that both fascism and communism presented a threat to the American way of life. Just as he warned that a fascist revival of the Roman Holy Empire would invade America, he also warned that America's rejection of God would allow communism to weaken the country to a degree that would make it susceptible to invasion. Now, it's only fair to point out that Herbert W. Armstrong was a pastor. Communism is a worldwide political movement organized inside many countries, Mr. Armstrong wrote in the April-May 1944 Plain Truth, a magazine that he was the editor of. From official communist literature, anyone can learn, if he wishes to know the truth, that communism is a plan in action for the violent overthrow of capitalism and the capitalistic governments. And capitalism means democracy. Not necessarily, but it does, because democracies control more than two-thirds of the world's capital at that time. During and after the Second World War, Mr. Armstrong dogmatically proclaimed the biblical truth that Russia would not attack America militarily before the second coming of Jesus Christ. Instead, he revealed that Russia would wage a psychological warfare of propaganda, infiltration, subversion, and demoralization. The communist Russians would attack our minds, our moral and spiritual values, rather than our bodies and our earthly possessions. And that was a quote from Armstrong. He goes on, "What we fail to grasp in the struggle with Russia is this. We are not fighting a single nation in a military war, but a gigantic, worldwide, plainclothes army masquerading as a political party, seeking to conquer the world with an entirely new kind of warfare." Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1956, "It's a kind of warfare we don't understand or know how to cope with. It uses every diabolical means to weaken us from within, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence. All this cleverly disguised as a harmless political party. Communism is worldwide psychological warfare." End of quote from Herbert Armstrong. Pointing to the scriptures, Mr. Armstrong warned of a time when end time Israel, particularly Britain and America, would become mixed up ideologically with foreigners. He references Hosea 7:8, Moffat. In particular, he pointed to Hosea 7:8:13, a passage warning that Britain and America would seek alliances with foreign nations, forsaking God. He further highlighted how this passage shows these foreign alliances would eat away America's strength, and unknown to America. History and current events have since shown that America's dalliance with Russian-style communism has perverted its morals, weakened its economic power, and eaten away its strength. This is a tragic story, but America was warned. Okay, so let's say this happened in 1956. Most of you weren't born, so you weren't warned. You grew up after the warning. You grew up after the mistake. 36 years after Mr. Armstrong first started warning American radio audiences about communism in 1934, KGB agent Yuri Bezmenov defected from the Soviet Union and escaped to Canada. After his defection, Bezmenov went to great lengths to warn the people of America that they were at war with communism. Like Mr. Armstrong said, this was not a war of guns and tanks, but of ideological subversion. According to Bezmenov, the subversion for foreign nations was so important to the Soviet KGB that most of their resources were allocated to it. Only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such, he explained in an interview with G. Edward Griffin. The other 85% is a slow process, which we call either ideological subversion or active measures. Ideological subversion, Bezmenov said, is a long-term process involving four stages. 1. Demoralization. 2. Destabilization. 3. Crisis and normalization. 4. The first of these states, demoralization, is a re-education program designed to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interest of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It takes about 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation, Bezmenov wrote in his book, Love Letter to America. Why that many or few? Simple. This is the minimum number of years needed to educate one generation of students in a target country, America, for example, and expose them to the ideology of the subverter. Now, such Soviet re-education methods took deep root in America during the 60s and the 70s. Bezmenov warned that KGB agents and their socialistic fellow travelers would use abstract art, perverted music, pornographic images, homosexual rights, racist politics, pacifist foreign policy, and socialist economics to demoralize America. Well, we haven't seen any of that. Mr. Armstrong also warned of this infiltration of America. I was saying over the air in writing back in 1934 that the communist unwavering strategy was, as a first offensive toward world domination, propaganda. Armstrong also wrote in a 1980 issue of Worldwide News, they began sowing the seeds of their communist, atheistic education all over the United States, especially among college professors and students. They invaded American university campuses full force, he continued, and the U.S. universities trustingly let them in. Can't deny that. Seeing the bigger picture, Mr. Armstrong warned that demoralization tactics originated from a higher source than Karl Marx or the KGB. Implying that it possibly was of higher spiritual motivations from higher spiritual entities than many even want to admit exist. And so, we will go on. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, documents from the Soviet archives revealed the Communist Party USA received 2 million to 3 million a year from the Kremlin to further its subversion activities. Most of the efforts put forth by the Kremlin, the US Communist Party, and their fellow travelers went not toward traditional espionage, but toward the infiltration of American education. According to Yuri Bezmenov, the main methods of Soviet demoralization were student exchanges with Moscow, the flooding of college campuses with Marxist literature, international seminars with Soviet participation, the infiltration of universities with radical leftists, often unknowingly under the guidance of KGB subverters, and the establishment of communist staff newspapers and the organization of study groups to disseminate Soviet propaganda. Before World War II, the Communist Party in the United States was making great headway, Mr. Armstrong wrote in the April 1980 Plain Truth. They began infiltrating the colleges and universities. If they could not convert professors, they worked on students. They worked on students who would become teachers later. Thus, they were recruiting teachers to teach their doctrine all over the United States. According to a former staff director of a Senate investigation subcommittee, in the years between 1935 and 1953, the Communist Party enlisted the support of at least 3,500 professors, many of them as due-paying members, many others as fellow travelers, and some as out-and-out espionage agents, some as adherents of the party line in varying degrees, and some as the unwitting dupes of subversion. The ultimate goal of communism is a utopian society where every individual is completely reliant on society as the Communist Party. This is why the Marxist-Leninist concept of education emphasizes mass character and collectivism over individual abilities. For a collectivist society to truly succeed, it needs more than just a generation of people who don't want to support themselves. It needs a generation of people who cannot support themselves. And this is the direction America is going, in the words of Bezmenov. The American romance with state-run education, as encouraged by the KGB's subverters, has already produced generations of graduates who cannot spell, cannot find Nicaragua on a world map, cannot think creatively and independently. I wonder if Albert Einstein would have arrived at his theory of relativity had he been educated in one of today's American public schools. Most likely he would have discovered marijuana and variant methods of sexual intercourse instead. Wrecking the economy. Communism, of course, is many things. Mr. Armstrong wrote in the February 1962 Plain Truth, it is a doctrine. It is a revolutionary program. It is relentless class war. It is a radical philosophy of history, a radical philosophy of society. It is a social system. It is an economic system. It is a political strategy. It is a world conspiracy. Now, as an economic system, communism pits the poorer classes against those who have been economically more successful by calling for the redistribution of wealth from the property-owning class to the wage labor class. To accomplish this redistribution of wealth, Karl Marx and Frederick Engels wrote in the Communist Manifesto that private land ownership must be abolished, a heavily progressive income tax must be instituted, and all factories and financial institutions must be nationalized. The mantra of Marxist economics is from each according to his ability, to each according to his need, as the state determines, of course. In other words, the wealth of those with more ability is redistributed to those with more need. This philosophy directly contradicts Jesus Christ's teachings represented in the parable of the pounds, Luke 19:12-27, in which each of Christ's servants is rewarded differently based on how much he actually produced with what he was given. The main reason Marxism doesn't work is that human beings lack incentive to work when they don't receive the full benefits of their labor. The Soviet Union fell because of Russia's enthusiastic embrace of Marxist-Leninist economics. As Russian economist Grigory Yavlinsky, an advisor to Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev, once said, the Soviet system is not working because the workers are not working. Despite the economic disaster that befell the Soviet Union, and Herbert Armstrong's numerous warnings, a shocking number of American economists cling to this socialist movement with Marxist traditions. The current political environment of the United States exalts many communist ideals. There is even compelling evidence connecting the current president to some of the biggest names in America's communist history. Herbert Armstrong warned that communist economics would sap America's strength and weaken its economic power. Herbert Armstrong warned that communist subversion would use every diabolical means to pervert our morals and wreck our social structure and destroy our spiritual and religious life. Perhaps the most diabolical of these means is the Marxist ploy to destroy the family. The Communist Manifesto calls the family a capitalist institution based on private gain. Marriage, it says, is but the hypocritical concealment of private prostitution. The authors hoped and predicted that both the bourgeois family and the bourgeois marriage would disappear with the vanishing of private capital. Throughout the 60s and 70s, Soviet front groups were working throughout America to boost the destruction of traditional marriage. Federal Bureau of Investigation informant Larry Grothwohl penetrated the revolutionary communist group Weather Underground after palling around with Bill Ayers, Bernadine Dorn, and their crew for months. Grothwohl wrote his report, Bringing Down America, an FBI informer with the Weathermen. The report reveals that the Weather Underground network was determined to abolish monogamous marriage, after which they viewed as repressive remnant of male and white supremacy. In his book, The Naked Communist, author William Cleon Skousen identified 45 communist goals for the ideological subversion of America. These goals were read on the floor of Congress on January 10, 1963. Among them are discrediting the family as an institution, encouraging promiscuity and easy divorce, emphasizing the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents, promoting pornography and presenting homosexuality as normal, natural, and healthy. These are all designed to advance the destruction of marriage and family. Under the Marxist philosophy and Soviet subversion tactics, American educators have spent decades trumpeting sexual liberation, militant feminism, and homosexual rights. Coincidence? All this has been done under the banner of freedom, but the truth is, these movements have served as Trojan horses in a far more sinister plot to abolish marriage and destroy the nuclear family. They've pretty much done that. In Karl Marx's words, communism abolishes eternal truths. It abolishes all religion and all morality. Instead of constituting them on a new basis, it therefore acts in contradiction to all past historical experience. Those are the words of Karl Marx. Or in Armstrong's words, communism is the vulture of decadent dying politics, religion, and society. He has a point. Herbert Armstrong elaborated in a 1979 World Tomorrow television broadcast. He says, quote, "Now Satan has a kingdom. He's the God of the world, and he's the invisible ruler of the world and the whole world. The whole world is under his sway by God's permission," end quote. He said, Satan, quote, "can't do anything God does not permit, because high above all rule is that of God. And God is permitting certain things for a reason that we learn by experience." He goes on to quote, "Jesus said, if a kingdom be divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand." Well, that's a good thing to remember. If the United States gets divided too much between the idea of freedom and the idea of communism, this country could not stand. Now, three decades later, it is evident that the United States is very much divided between the idea of freedom and the idea of communism. Because the American people rejected God and allowed Satan-inspired communist philosophy to creep into the nation, God will allow this experience to teach America the natural consequence of broken law. Talk of equality sounds noble, but Herbert Armstrong warned that communist equality was only a means to an end. As fostered by the Soviet Union, he wrote in 1949, "Communism is launched as a worldwide class struggle, pitting the poor class against those who have been economically more successful, arousing class prejudice, stirring up race hatred. And while they pretend to stand for peace, they engender only strife, and they feed like a vulture on poverty, discontent, discouragement, confusion, and chaos." Armstrong also warned, "Communism is the devil's effort through his demon-inspired human tools to take us from this great national and economic blessing God ever conferred on any people." Looking at America today, you'd have to admit that once again, he was right. And many of you have a hard time even allowing the concept of a religious perspective to be melded with day-to-day topics. If you allow it at all, you allow it only as religious, which you only defer to small times, like in a church service, and you limit anything experience to that. In other words, you are basically not accepting spiritual nature. You're rejecting it. You don't want to hear about it. If he mentions the Bible, he's not really, he's just a pastor. He's just an evangelical trying to get my money. Never mind that the government is doing exactly that. And you're cheering for it. You've been had, America. They've got you in the net. Now, the question is, what are you going to try to do? Perhaps you can get out. First, you must admit you're in the net. That's the whole purpose of this show. Now, let's go back to some things that happened in America. Now, this was the communist, not Marxist, because that never actually got anywhere. The Bolsheviks took hold of that and used it for its intellectual standing. And they perverted it to what they manifested in Russia. And they had ideas of doing the same to America. And they had some goals. I will simply list those goals to you. In 1963, the communist goal was the U.S. acceptance of coexistence as the only alternative to atomic war. U.S. willingness to capitulate in preference to engaging in atomic war. Number three, develop the illusion that total disarmament by the United States would be a demonstration of moral strength. Permit free trade between all nations, regardless of communist affiliation. Extension of long-term loans to Russia and Soviet satellites, number five. Number six, provide American aid to all nations regardless of communist domination. Grant recognition of Red China, admission of Red China to the UN. Set up East and West Germany as separate states in spite of Khrushchev's promise in 1955 to provide free elections under supervision by the UN. Number nine, prolong the conferences to ban atomic tests because the United States has agreed to suspend as long as negotiations are in progress. Allow all Soviet satellites individual representation in the UN. And to promote the UN as the only hope for mankind. In its charter, it is written that it be set up as a one-world government with its own independent armed forces. Some communist leaders believe the world can be taken over as easily by the UN as Moscow. Okay, that's where we wanted to take tonight's topic. That's kind of where this George Floyd thing is going, and that's why we didn't want to talk about the George Floyd case in particular. But what the defund the police movement currently, it's just another baby step, and one that looks like will take root because they have the media and they show you what they want to see to make you think a certain way, and people simply are too stupid to not buy it. Well, many don't buy it, and they're not buying it, but the media is selling it, and they've got a monopoly. And so you're going to have to protect your own mind because you're not going to get any support from today's media. They're out to complete these 10 things. UN as the only hope for mankind. Well, That would require its own armed forces. And that's where the defund the police comes in to be replaced by the UN forces. Now, doesn't that make sense? Wouldn't you trust a world police force more than the evil, corrupt ones you have in your hometown? As we have demonstrated their corruption, ad nauseum. And so you must understand that these things are something that they're trying to implement. So you can't fall for the shenanigans, but we do. And so the defund the police needs to be completely shut down. That argument needs to end because we do not need a world police force or a national police force in America. That's not ever going to be a good thing for freedom.
Maximum volume.
And that seems to be the key right there. Ownership is communal, which means at some point it's like handing everything to the government. Something that we are doing here bit by bit, and they keep wanting more, and it never has worked. At its core, communism opposes capitalism. In an effort to get rid of capitalism, communist governments, in theory, they pay their workers according to their ability and needs, which never works out. Much like any theory, communism can be taken to the extreme and become its own form of oppression for workers, which goes against the ideals that Marxism envisions. And a good example is North Korea. While they are a communist country, their own visions and ways of thinking have been added to the theory. Additionally, the government leader takes more of the role of a monarch. Much like communism, socialism is a system of politics and economics with roots in Marxist ideals. In socialism, a central government owns all means of wealth, but individuals can still own property. Additionally, unlike the violent uprisings that can arise with communism, socialism typically occurs more organically through reforms and changes with an elected government. While a true socialist society doesn't exist, a few close runner-ups are Norway and Denmark. However, these governments still have capitalist sectors. At the center, Marxism was a theory created by Karl Marx and Engels to create a classless society where workers were appreciated and worked to benefit the common good. While the true theory has never reached fruition, a few governments have tried through communism and socialism. Yeah, well, Marx may have missed the mark at the level of his presuppositions. One example of this is presupposing that man can only be happy in an economic sense. In reality, relationships are more important to happiness than anything. Poor people lead happy lives if they're surrounded by people who love them. Wealthy people often lead miserable lives when the opposite is true. It's the way human beings are wired. Wired for a relationship with the one who created them. Marx had other faulty presuppositions. I can't say that word. Presuppositions. When you build on a faulty foundation, the whole structure comes tumbling down, just like Marxism has in the real world, keeping millions upon millions of people entrenched in its system. But they have a plan, and they know how to implement their plan in little baby steps, and they've been doing this in America and other places for quite some time. Marxism, a body of doctrine developed by Karl Marx. And to a lesser extent by Frederick Engels in the mid-19th century. It originally consisted of three related ideas, a philosophical, anthropological, and Marxism, a body of doctrine developed by Karl Marx and to a lesser extent by Frederick Engels in the mid-19th century. It originally consisted of three related ideas, a philosophical, anthropological, and a theory of history and an economic and political program. There is also Marxism as it has been understood and practiced by the various socialist movements, particularly before 1914. Then there is Soviet Marxism as worked out by Vladimir Lenin and modified by Joseph Stalin, under which the name of Marxism and Leninism became the doctrine of the Communist Party set up after the Russian Revolution. Offshoots of this included Marxism as interpreted by the anti-Stalinist Leon Trotsky and his followers, Mao Zedong's Chinese variant. Of Marxism in the developing world. There were also the post-World War II non-dogmatic Marxisms that have modified Marxist thought with borrowings from modern philosophies, principally from those of Edmund Husserl and Martin Heidegger, but also from Sigmund Freud and others. The written work of Marx cannot be reduced to a philosophy, much less to a philosophical system. The whole of his work is a radical critique of philosophy, especially of G.W.F. Hegel's idealist system and the philosophies of the left and right post-Hegelians. It is not, however, a mere denial of those philosophies. Marx declared that philosophy must become reality. One could no longer be content with interpreting the world. One must be concerned with transforming it, which meant transforming both the world itself and human consciousness of it. This, in turn, required a critique of experience together with a critique of ideas. In fact, Marx believed that all knowledge involves a critique of ideas. He was not an empiricist. Rather, his work teems with concepts, alienation, praxis, creative labor, value, and so forth, that he inherited from earlier philosophers and economists, including Hegel and Johann Fichte and Immanuel Kant, among others. What uniquely characterizes the thought of Marx is that instead of making abstract affirmations about a whole group of problems, such as human nature, knowledge, and matter, he examines each problem in its dynamic relation to the others. And above all, he tries to relate them to historical, social, political, and economic realities. Marx had a historical materialism. Marx applied it to capitalist society, both in manifest Kommunistische Partei, the Communist Manifesto, and Das Kapital. In other writings, although Marx reflected upon this working hypothesis for years, he did not formulate it in a very exact manner. Different expressions served him for identical realities. If one takes the text literally, social reality is structured in the following way. 1. Underlying everything as the real basis of society is the economic structure. This structure includes A, the material forces of production, that is, the labor and the means of production, and B, the overall relations of production, or the social and political arrangements that regulate production and distribution. Although Marx stated there is a correspondence between the material forces of production and the indispensable relations of production, he never made himself clear on the nature of the correspondence, a fact that was to be the source of differing interpretations among his later followers. Above the economic structure rises the superstructure, consisting of legal and political forms of social consciousness that correspond to the economic structure. Marx says nothing about the nature of this correspondence between ideological forms and economic structure, except that through the ideological forms, individuals become conscious of the conflict within the economic structure between the material forces of production and the existing relations of production expressed in the legal property relations. In other words, the sum total of the forces of production accessible to men determines the condition of society and is the base of society. The social structure and the state issue continually from the life processes of definite individuals, and they are in reality, that is, acting and materially producing. The political relations that individuals establish among themselves are dependent on material production, as are the legal relations. This foundation of the social on the economic is not an incidental point. It colors Marx's whole analysis. It is found in Das Kapital as well as other writings. To go directly to the heart of the work of Marx, one must focus on his concrete program for humanity. This is just as important for an understanding of Marx as are the Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital. Marx's interpretation of human nature begins with human need. Man, he wrote in the Economic Philosophic Manuscripts of 1844, the point of departure of human history is therefore living human beings who seek to satisfy certain primary needs. The first historical fact is the production of the means to satisfy these needs. This satisfaction, in turn, opens the way for new needs. Human activity is thus essentially a struggle with nature that must furnish the means of satisfying human needs, drink, food, clothing, the development of human powers, and then of human intellectual and artistic abilities. In this undertaking, people discover themselves as productive beings who humanize themselves through their labor. Furthermore, they humanize nature while they naturalize themselves. By their creative activity, by their labor, they realize their identity with the nature that they master, while at the same time, they achieve free consciousness. Born of nature, they become fully human by opposing it. Becoming aware in their struggle against nature is what separates them from it. They find the conditions of their fulfillment, of the realization of their true stature. The dawning of consciousness is inseparable from struggle. By appropriating all the creative energies, they discover that all that is called history is nothing else than a process of creating man through human labor. The becoming of nature for man. Man has thus evident and irrefutable proof of his own creation by himself. Understood in its universal dimension, human activity reveals that for man, man is the supreme being. It is thus vain to speak of God, creation, and metaphysical problems, according to Marx. Fully naturalized humans are sufficient unto themselves. They have recaptured the fullness of humanity and its full liberty. Living in a capitalist society, however, the individual is not truly free. He is an alienated being. It is not a home in his world. The idea of alienation, which Marx takes from Hegel and Ludwig, plays a fundamental role in the whole of his written work. Starting with the writings of his youth and continuing through Das Kapital and in the Economic and Philosophic Manuscripts, the alienation of labor is seen to spring from the fact that the more the worker produces, the less he has to consume. And the more he values he creates, the more he devalues himself. Because his product and his labor are estranged from him, the life of the worker depends on things that he has created but that are not his, so that instead of finding his rightful existence through his labor, he loses it in this world of things that are external to him. No work, no pay. Under these conditions, labor defines the fullness of concrete humanity. The generic being of man, nature as well as his intellectual faculties, is transformed into a being which is alien to him, into a means of individual existence. Nature, his body, his spiritual essence become alien to him, and man is made alien to man. When carried out, you take this and play it out. Final word from Radio Free California. This is Frank Boomer, your host on The Voice of Freedom tonight. Now, let's take a look. If you paid attention to the presentation, you would have discovered that our proposed enemy wants to destroy the family. He wants to dramatically influence the education of the youth, and he wants to sabotage your belief system and want you to be not spiritual. Now, those are the tactics used. You have to ask yourself, have they been effective, or have those tactics actually been employed? And if you're honest, you'll have to say that they have. The United States government goes to great lengths to break up families. That is not even a topic for debate. It is much more beneficial for someone not in the ownership class to go through life with a broken family than with a solid family. We've heard about the black families being broke down. It's not just them. It's every family. Education, you can clearly see the influence there. The leftists have taken it over. This started in the 30s. They only need 20 years. They've had three generations to get it down. And your beliefs in your spiritual life. They want you to believe what they teach you and to disregard what you know. And anything spiritual is not going to be really given to you. And so, that would be what they're doing to attack you. So if you have a motivation to defend yourself, you would want to restore the family, restore values and education, and have spiritual beliefs openly discussed in freedom and respect. Now you may notice that there's one particular political party in America that kind of rides on that, or at least they have. But they went away from it too, because the effects of the infiltration of the educational system, the effects of demoralization have been so complete that both parties are in on it. Only recently have we seen some idea, some hope of someone who understands the problem and intends to fix it from the dynamics where it needs to be fixed. We're not a political organization. We're not affiliated with any party, but we do see what we see. Thank you for listening. This is Frank Boomer for Radio Free California. Have a very wonderful day.